Welcome to the One-Off Technology Podcast with opinions, news, and views. On this podcast, we talk about technology topics and how they affect you. I'm your host, Roy Richardson, and each week we will feature an entertaining guest to talk about different topics. Now let's begin the show. Hey, welcome to the One-Off Technology Podcast. Here we cover different topics and different matters going on in the news that involve technology and things and how they affect the average person and things you need to think about. And my name is Roy Richardson. And today my guest is Chuck Brink. He's going to be my partner in crime on this podcast. He may even be brave enough to be my partner in crime on future podcasts. Today's topic, we're going to talk about privacy schmivacy. And it's about encryption and privacy. How you like that so far? That's kind of what I was thinking.
I like that.
Just go into the radio announcer voice and say things.
Yes, I think that's good. So I imagine that later on you're going to take this recording and start like snipping this all up and cutting it together wherever you can find decent pauses and breaks to do so.
Yes, exactly. Encryption, and does protecting the innocent also protect criminals? And yeah.
I guess the way I kind of look at it is in today's society, there really isn't any such thing as privacy anymore. There's enough closed caption cameras going on. Pretty much if you're outside your door, you're being watched or monitored by someone. Your device is tracking your location. You know, if you're on the internet doing anything, your activities are being monitored. So, you know, I think the concept of privacy is a quaint notion and not something that people can really expect anymore.
Well, and I agree with that for the most part, but I think there are ways in which you can keep some level of privacy. Makes people a little crazy, but I have like multiple email addresses and I do things using certain email addresses for certain things. So I have like my email address I use strictly for business things. And then I have kind of my social media email address, and then I have my junk email address, the one I really do want their information, but I really don't want them to spam me, so here's that throwaway email address. Of course, there's some cool tricks with Google where you can add, like, you know, plus sign, plus spam at the end of it or something, so that when that comes in, you just filter right in the garbage. But I do think there's some privacy, and that you have some controls now. So, like, one thing that people often forget, like, for example, if you use an iPhone or an Android phone, you may have iCloud, or you might have Google Photos. Facebook now has a new thing called Moments that they're actually steering everybody toward, that's going to try to do the same thing, where the Moments backs up all your pictures for you on your phone, and then you can immediately share them. And privacy comes in sharing only what you want to share, as opposed to sharing everything that ever happens to you. So I think you have to make a conscious decision and say, I'm going to keep some things in my life private. People don't need to know on Twitter every time I'm going to climb into the shower. That's just not something they need to know.
And I don't know. I think sometimes people do need to know that I'm actually getting in the shower and taking a shower, that I don't just, you know, smell constantly.
Well, okay, yes, if you want people to have some inkling that you indeed do have personal hygiene and that type of thing. So, yeah, I mean, I can understand from that point of view. But, you know, I have followed those people who post everything. I'm now eating broccoli and some mac and cheese. It was a good supper. Now I'm going to go take a shower. Now I must take my kids to daycare. Well, so there's kind of a privacy violation, because now you've told all the crooks you're not at home anymore because you're taking your kids to daycare. So,
true.
You know, privacy is that information that you keep to yourself. And then, you know, everybody's kind of freaking out about encryption, and I get frustrated because politicians know so little about encryption, but yet they want to pass laws that kind of blanket, oh, we're going to do this, and the tech company shouldn't be encrypting things. But we need encryption. We need for example, HTTPS. So every time we go visit a website and we do a credit card transaction, it's not so much protecting what I'm, the information about what I'm purchasing. I don't care if people know what I buy, but I do care that they don't get my credit card information. And so encryption from that standpoint is important. And then our cell phones. So in the hopefully unlikely event your cell phone is stolen, if your phone has a passcode on it and your phone is encrypted, they will have to go to great lengths in order to get a hold to the information on your device. Okay, but that's the crook, the robber, but also the police. And for most law-abiding citizens, what's on their phone is not a big deal if the police see it. Unless, of course, it's that drunk video that shows you getting in your car and then driving down the street. Okay, that one you probably don't want anybody to see because you don't want to advertise the word, by the way, last night I decided to go commit DUI. And luckily I videoed the whole thing. So,
yeah. And I think that's where the line starts to get crossed is, I have information that's out there that, I have saved for my own personal reasons. And should the government, law enforcement, whoever have a right to access that information and then use it against me just because it's kind of quote unquote available. And I don't agree with that. I think, that I should more or less have to be caught in the act and that a video of it, a recording of it, shouldn't necessarily be enough grounds to stand on. That, they shouldn't be able to say, oh, well, we know you have this recording on your phone. You have to let us have it so we can then go back and prosecute you. I think that's stretching and reaching.
Well, and I agree. I mean, just a few months back, there was a guy that was arrested for child pornography, and he would not give them the passcode to his phone. His phone was encrypted because by default, iPhones are encrypted now, and Android phones can be. The newer ones are encrypted by default, but the older ones, you can go in there and choose to encrypt them. And so he pleaded the fifth, and most people don't know what the fifth actually stands for, but what the Fifth Amendment does as far as protecting people, but a judge ruled that because there's a chance there is evidence on that phone, that he has to type in his passcode and let them into his phone.
And so, I think that's wrong. I think the Fifth Amendment stands there. That's to protect you from self-incrimination. I cannot be forced to testify against myself, and by right. giving that passcode, I am essentially testifying against myself and handing you evidence, doing your job for you, and convicting myself.
And I agree. I agree with that as well. That even though I very much would like, if that guy is genuinely guilty, to go to jail for his crimes, because I completely disagree for what he's doing, and I feel like it's a criminal thing, that he should go to jail. But that's assuming that a court of his peers indeed find him guilty using what other evidence they're able to find. I guess the catch is, and then, but the catch, the flip side of that is that the government would argue, well, okay, what about in a case of a terrorist? And we know for a fact that these people are involved in activities that are going to hurt a lot of people.
I think the same rule still applies. Those folks have that right to privacy, and until it's been exposed through lawful means, we have a system in place for them to get warrants that allow them to circumvent, the privacy statutes and all that, then no, you don't have access.
Yeah. Well, and that you bring up a key point, is that the government should not have carte blanche to be able to spy on me in any way, shape, or form unless they have something that compels them to get a warrant, and they should have a warrant to be to seize my property or to search my home and that type of thing. And those things are protected, but, by them doing spying on us without a warrant violates the Fourth Amendment. I'm a big fan of constitutional law. I think the Constitution is great. I don't lean on the Constitution from a political standpoint. That's not my way, and my views are independent. I did this weird thing where I vote on issues. There are some issues that the Republicans agree with that I agree with also, but then there are issues that the Democrats have a point of view and I agree with. And then there are some issues where neither of those parties have anything right about that particular issue. And so I disagree with them both and I have my view. And so...
How dare you actually stop and think about the individual issue and not just swing with your party and, you know, let common sense rule you. That's the aberration that that is.
Well, and I agree. Now, the difficulty there is that the supply of common sense is limited these days. And
yes, it's very expensive. If you've checked the price on that recently, it has gone up considerably.
It has. And I firmly believe that we should constantly be looking for the truth and to be fully prepared to revise our opinions on things. And that, the interesting thing is there are things that I believed when I was younger that I no longer believe. And so, but one thing I do believe in, and not for political reasons, but because I'm very proud of what the founding fathers did in creating our country. And I think in a lot of ways we misconstrue their original intent on things. And so people go off on a political slant. It's kind of like whatever your faith is, I'm going to take my faith and spin it around so it matches my belief as opposed to sticking to my belief. And so the Constitution gets taken out of context a lot. Oh, well, yeah, he's violating my right because I'm allowed to do this, that, or the other because the Constitution says so. And in a lot of cases, people don't know what the Constitution actually says. So Edward Snowden told the whole world that the NSA was spying on us. And then tech companies had to admit to the government that the government had asked them for back doors to their security. And that the government had the power without warranty to spy on us. And
Everything they said was that he said was... You know, largely true. No one wanted to hear it. No one wanted to have to admit it and own up to it. But the sad reality is it was all dangerously true.
It was. And it still is, sadly. And the NSA until last month could continue to capture the metadata from all phone calls in the United States. And suddenly the bill has expired and allowed them to do that. We have to just hope that the government acting in good faith is indeed adhering to the law.
And that's probably a fallacy in and of itself, expecting the government to act reasonably, responsibly, and in the best interest of the citizens.
Well, I don't know if they're doing that, but if we pass the law and it should be enforced and they should be adhering to it, do they always act in the best interest of the people? Unfortunately, that also falls under the category of politics. But so the point I wanted to make, though, is that, you know, a lot of people, I'm in favor of the United States protecting us from terrorists, but not at the expense of personal privacy. I believe a warrant should be issued anytime the government wants our data. And this should be protected under the Constitution, but alas, it isn't. The Fifth Amendment of the Bill of Rights protects against self-incrimination, and this somewhat protects the privacy of private information. The Fourth Amendment Bill of Rights protects our right against unreasonable search and seizures, and warrants aren't supposed to be issued without probable cause. So by the government spying on us without a warrant, they are violating our Fourth Amendment rights.
Yes. But then I guess it starts to get a little murky when you get into, you know, national security and the NSA and those sorts of things where, you know, they kind of claim eminent domain over all of our data, all of our activities, what we're doing, because, well, we can't wait around for warrants and probable cause and, you know, the due process to, you know, fall out and get warrants. We just have to act because, you know, we could be dealing with something that's too time sensitive to wait. And I don't know that I agree that that's the right way to go.
It is a slippery slope. I'm not sure. There are things that in my mind I'll say I'm willing to let the government do if they know for a fact that people's lives are in danger, that it's going to be a major catastrophe, people are going to be hurt. And I'm like, okay, to a point, I agree they should proceed forward. However, if they have something for that, they should be able to get a warrant. I don't know how it is in real life, but on cop shows, they can get a warrant real quick.
Yeah, they have a judge on,
That's right.
speed dial with a bat
Judges on
phone.
speed dial. I'm sure the federal government has a similar situation. They have a judge on speed dial. But the other thing that's very concerning is that they have secret courts. And those secret courts are presented with classified information. And then, they can make decisions. But I'm not sure how I feel about that. I understand the need. The government itself must seem to think it has a right to privacy. And I know there are national secrets that we probably definitely don't want anyone outside the U.S. government to have. I used to be in the military, so I very much understand the need for privacy and security and top secret clearances and that type of thing. But for the average citizen, those things shouldn't impact us. The average citizen, you should have to get a warrant to come search our house. You should have probable cause. There should not be any reason that you come and search our house unless you have probable cause and a warrant to go with it.
Right. So, wrapping this a little bit back into technology discussion I was having today, looking at Windows 10 and all of the lovely data capture that it does, and the debate was raging about, it's invading my privacy, it's stealing my data, and it, doesn't respect the opt-out features, it still sends the data. So the point I posed back was, well, perhaps it still sends the data, but if you trip the opt-out flag, maybe when it gets to its destination, it's just thrown into the bin and it's not actually used as it would be if the flag were set to, yes, you can have my data. So does that pose any kind of a different, privacy flag into the arena where we're still taking the data, but we're not doing anything with it, as opposed to we don't collect the data in the first place?
Right. And well, so yeah, that's definitely a tricky one because so supposedly, there is when you're opt in, then they have your identity, they have your location information, they have what metadata that they have on you, and it is all tied together with the data they collect about you. And then they say the intent, just like Google does, is that we're going to use your information to your benefit. We're going to give you free services in exchange for it. And then you have the flip side where you opt out and where they supposedly anonymize those things such as your identity and where you are. And then they just capture metadata. And, the problem is that scientists have done many data science studies where they've found that they can take anonymous metadata and paint a pretty good picture of who the person is, even if they don't know their name. And then further tests found with like an 80% certainty they could indeed match up that data with the person it belonged to.
Well, it's sort of like the, climate surveys or, things of that nature they do in almost every, job across America, where, we want to hear your feedback, we want to hear your opinion, and when we present this data back to management, it's not going to be anyone's specific name. It may not even be a specific title, but it will just be like your age range, your gender, and your department, so that it all gets somewhat anonymized in that sense. But if they present back people's specific comments, often people's writing styles, the beefs that they make, things of that nature. It's pretty easy just knowing, oh, it's a male in the 35 to 45 range from the IT department, and they're complaining about this certain thing. Oh, well, I know that's Bob, because Bob always rags on this one particular, thing, and that's what he's always going to complain about. So, well, if he's complaining about this in this survey, or this comment came up in this survey, I know it came from Bob. So
Yeah, Bob is
I think
like
it's,
that. I
yes.
totally agree. Bob is like that. So
That Bob, he just, we got to do something
that
with Bob.
Bob guy, he's got some crazy opinions, I tell you.
He does. But yeah, so I totally get that it's possible to take a seemingly random set of data and work it backwards and make it not so anonymous that, we take your browsing history, your location, your IP address, and all the activity that you're doing, and yeah, we can piece it back to within, 85, 90% certainty this is you.
Right.
Because, if there's only probably a handful of people in the town I live in that constantly search Hello Kitty stuff, and I'm sorry, but I'm probably one of them, so.
We won't tell anybody.
Oh, shoot.
Anyway,
Oh, well.
I can edit that out later, I promise. I'll edit that out, so
Yeah,
nobody will know.
Right.
It'll
Just the
just be a
internet.
Sanrio surprise for you.
That's right.
Anyway. Yeah, but you were talking earlier about how everywhere we go, there's video cameras. That day and age that George Orwell talked about in his book 1984, Big Brother's all around us. And even worse, we're giving him the keys to our privacy and our lives. There's this delicate balance between what is right and what is just and what is evil and what is bad, and what's the right answer.
I don't know what the right answer is. I think the right answer is making sure that whatever I decide to share, whatever I decide to put out there for public consumption, the public can consume. Wherever I decide to draw the line and say, nope, this is my personal box, this is my personal space, that's respected and nobody can come inside that personal space. It's kind of like when you're on the subway in New York City. You have a very low expectation of privacy and personal space there, just given the nature of things. People are going to be touching you and bumping you and that sort of thing, but there's still an expectation that, nobody's going to be, touching your butt, grabbing your crotch, that sort of thing. There's still a certain level of personal space that has to be respected and understood. And I think that's where I draw the privacy line in today's society, that I set the line in the sand here, and anything I push across the line, that's okay if the government, if friends and family, work, whoever sees it. Anything that's behind the line, though, that I haven't pushed out, it's not okay if other people get a hold of that information, if they request that information. No, that's not okay.
Yeah, and I agree. I guess my fear is that the internet gives people this feeling of anonymity. They think I can say anything I want, I can do anything I want. It's no holds barred. Nobody knows who I am, and people need to not have that misconception, because it is very easy to find out who they are. The
Yeah, and that's,
internet knows. The internet will find you.
yeah, and that's, I think, then where encryption comes in, that anything that I'm keeping behind that line in the sand that I'm saying is my personal information, I need to make incredibly sure that no one can read it or understand it if they do come across that line. So I have my hard drives encrypted, my phone encrypted, anything that I store in the cloud is obfuscated in some way, that my passwords are as secure as possible, two-factor authentication is enabled wherever and whenever I can do it, to try and reinforce that line in the sand, so that I've done everything possible that I can do to ensure my privacy. I think that's the key thing that people need to understand and take away about privacy and encryption. You know, privacy is you drawing the line in the sand and saying what's mine versus what you can have access to. Encryption is how you ensure what's yours stays yours.
Yeah, and that's, yeah, that's the hard part is how do you keep what's yours yours? Well, and so I do the same thing. I encrypt my phone and I encrypt my laptop. Now, you know, most people don't think about it. So, oh, I'm protected. I've got my laptop encrypted. I'm fine. But then they don't think about the external hard drive that they're backing up to. The external hard drive is probably not encrypted. They don't think about their Google Drive or their OneDrive. It's not encrypted. It's got a password. You can do two-factor authentication to lock it down. But, you know, it's not encrypted. If somebody compromises your account, compromises your email, then they potentially could access those files, that type of thing. So, it's, you know, you also have to kind of think ahead of time. What am I willing to store in the cloud if I'm paranoid about my privacy?
Well, and that's a really good point with, you know, cloud services. It doesn't even have to be someone from the outside getting access to your data. It can be, you know, the service provider itself either rummaging through your data or turning over your data to someone else through a request unbeknownst to you. Mm-hmm. You know, Google gets the search and seizure requests, if you will, or warrants to turn over people's email accounts, their Google Drive accounts. And I don't think they're under any requirement to notify the end user that, hey, your data has been turned over. So now you're part of a large pool of data that's been seized, is being looked at, inspected, and, you know, discovered. And you don't even know. So now that line in the sand has been crossed and you can do nothing about it.
Right. Yeah. And this kind of touches on topics that I'm actually saving for the next podcast, where we talk about anonymity and safe browsing in the internet age. Because I'm like, you know, want to stress to people that when you're on the internet, you are not anonymous. No matter what you do, people can figure out who you are. You know, like, for example, in the UK, they passed a law where internet service providers have to keep logs of everywhere somebody goes for a year.
Right.
The United States has tried on several occasions to try to pass similar bills. To the best of my knowledge, that has not been passed yet. However, there was a cybersecurity bill that was passed yesterday that has some very interesting language in it, and I have yet to be able to digest all of it, but something that was talked about as a possibility in that law was to have, you know, ISPs keeping logs for, say, 6 months, so that, you know, sure, you might be going in incognito mode, which is a feature in Chrome, or privacy mode, private mode on Internet Explorer, to hide, at least not have a history logged on your local computer, and to not save cookies from places you visit. But, you know, that internet service provider still knows where you're going.
Yep.
So, and the only way to prevent that is if you were going over some sort of VPN tunnel for all your surfing. And then you got to think, well, they could potentially subpoena the VPN company, you know? So it's just, though a lot of them claim to go through multiple layers to try to, randomize what goes through there, so they can't really pinpoint what you're doing. But, you know, the other side of that, though, is, are you doing something that needs that level of privacy and practice?
Or, yes, Hello Kitty needs that level of security.
Well, okay, I can understand that. Yeah, I do. You know, I don't want people to be able to get access to my pictures and stuff. I don't have any pictures I'm ashamed of, but I worry about what people do with things. And anything that gets put on the internet, people think is fair game. That's how a meme comes into play. Memes wouldn't exist if people didn't think they could take a picture somebody posted and turn it into something bad or funny or cruel.
Right.
So, All right. Well, I think we talked all the way around our topic.
I think we did. And yeah. And I have the answer. I know how we can fix this problem.
Okay, what's the fix?
We create our own internet.
Create our own internet.
Yes. That is the solution. I'll create my internet and I'll have it dial up to your internet, and then our internets talk to each other, and then that's the solution.
I was going to say maybe using AOL would be obscure enough.
It could, yeah, that may be the way we do this.
If you dial in with a modem and connect AOL, that is probably the way to make this obscure.
Yes, we go all service. The way back. I know. One of my friends literally still has that service. I was shocked and appalled that they still had AOL.
I actually won't reply to anybody if they email me with an AOL email address. I assume it's spam.
It's maybe not always, but I don't know that we should allow those people to still be on the internet because they may be part of the problem.
I'm coming to their house and I'm going to rip the modem out of their computer and say, dude, have you ever heard of internet? It's awesome.
No, they haven't because they're on AOL. They have not heard of the internet. The message has not made it to them yet. Their 14.4 modem is still trying to download it. The CD is still in the mail.
Yeah, see, you know, the funny thing is I used, so when the internet came to the town I live in, there was an internet service provider. I found out about them like a month before they were even open. They let people sign up 2 weeks before they were even going to go live. So I'm like, I went and signed up. I got to be a beta tester and help out through the first few days when they were trying to get it going. And I ran an electronic bulletin board at the time, a PBS. So literally people called into my computer to send emails and to download software. Cause I had a 6 CD changer with tons and tons of shareware. And so people could log into my PBS and download shareware. This is when shareware was huge. Not this, not now, but it was really huge back then. That was the only way you got software because there weren't that many stores that sold it. And when I got the internet, I literally told everybody in my BBS, by the way, in a week, this BBS is gone. The internet's taking over, and I'll you just have to see me there. So it's just somebody mentioned that the other day, and I thought, yep, as soon as the internet came to this town, I ditched my BBS, and the internet was the only way to go.
So what you're saying is you were one of the first either pirates, BitTorrents, or Tors in existence.
In those days? The software I had was legitimate shareware. I wasn't doing any wares or stuff like that. It was legitimate software. I literally went and bought CDs full of shareware libraries and had a program called Easy Door that went through the CDs and cataloged all the software on them. People could go through a DOS ASCII screen menu and pick the software they want and then download it. So
this is sounding more horrible by the minute. Please continue.
Well, you know, like PaintShop Pro used to be shareware. That was the only way you could get PaintShop Pro. That was the graphics program because only rich people had Adobe Photoshop. That's pretty much still true, but you know, there was no GIMP then or any of the other cool programs out there.
There should not be a GIMP now. I'm just going to throw that out there.
Well, it does have a name I just don't like, but you know, it's a good photo editing software, and if you can't afford PaintShop Pro, then GIMP is the second runner up, and it will use a lot of filters for paint for Adobe Photoshop. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So now that you've admitted this to the internet at large, I am beginning to understand why encryption and privacy is near and dear to your heart, because you are the original pirate. I should call you Captain Roy.
No. I did wear the eye patch, but I do celebrate Talk Like a Pirate Day with probably a little more abandon than most people.
and you look stunning in the eye patch, by the way.
I do. I often wear it at parties. It's quite a hit, and I get paid to go. So, but you know, but I just, the internet is the most amazing thing in the world, and so I left those days behind, and you know, good times.
You know, that's one of the key things. The internet is amazing, and we want it to keep being amazing, and that's why privacy is so important, and why encryption is important, because without those two things, the internet will not continue and it will not be amazing, and we need it to be, because how would I get Hello Kitty without the internet?
I know, and how can I go and ignore people on Facebook without the internet?
Exactly.
So
exactly.
Yeah. All right, well, I think that about wraps it up. Key points definitely to me is that encrypt whenever you can, protect your privacy, post only what you really want the world to know, because there is no such thing as anonymous, and be kind to everybody, especially those who like Hello Kitty.
Yes. Also, bug out bags and bunkers are not overrated.
Okay.
That's my words of wisdom.
Yeah, and I want to end with this quote. Ben Franklin said, "Those who surrender freedom for security will not have, nor do they deserve, either one." I think there's never been truer words than that. Well, that's not true. There are other words that are true as well, but those are good ones.
Those are good words.
All right. Chuck, thanks so much for hanging out with me and helping me test out this new frontier I'm trying to venture into.
Yes, this podcast is probably going where no podcast has ever gone before.
Down a rabbit hole?
No, quite possibly.
They always do that.
So, I don't know. Only the good ones.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure we're covering. I'm not sure we're not covering a topic anybody's ever covered. But these are things that I think about and care about and am paranoid about, and I think others should be.
And if there's a topic that people would like to hear us cover, is there an email address, a Twitter account, a Facebook page? Are there any ways people can get in touch with us and tell us we should talk about these things?
And I should probably do something really cool and create like a Twitter account just for the podcast, but I haven't yet. So you can just tweet me at A. Roy Richardson. I'm on Twitter with that, A. Roy Richardson. And send me your thoughts and your ideas, and I will look very hard to see if we can make a topic for that. If you go look at my blog, faithintech.com, you will see a list of the topics for our future podcast. This is podcast number one. Our next podcast, podcast number two, is going to be all about being anonymous, titled Anonymous Browsing Ain't So Anonymous, and we'll talk about ways to do safe browsing, ways to just keep your PC safe from the interwebs, and
wrap it up. That's how you keep it safe. Always wrap it up.
That's it. Wrap it up. Yes. Practice safe browsing. So
yes.
All right. Until then, stay later. Strange. Later. Yes.
Been listening to the One-Off Technology Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Look for other episodes of our podcast coming to a podcast universe near you.